thanks for joining us. Today is Destination Health. It's a little quiet right now, but questions are starting to roll in. I've got an open for both shows, but nothing real long. So I'm going to try to get to as many questions as I can today. So today will be your best shot. If you have a question, a comment, something you want to get through and talk about, press one on your phone. The sooner you do that, the better your odds. We're going to get started. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. My co-host, Kim Cockerham, is off this week. She's traveling. She will be back with us next week, so I'll be flying solo today. I'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything health, nutrition, food, fitness, diet, lifestyle, exercise, supplements, drugs, disease, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call me. We've been lied to for decades, and it's killing us. We're here to help you find your way to the truth and find your destination health. We're going to get to those calls and questions in just a little bit. I do have something, kind of an update. I'm not going to get too deep into this today because I'm still doing a lot of testing on this. But we've been looking, virtually everybody that deals with fitness, nutrition, health, those kind of issues, we're always looking for a marker, some sort of measurement that will tell us what our health is and what our overall health is. We're always trying to measure things. And I'm a big believer in that. If you can't measure something, it's very hard to improve it and know when you're improving it. But the human body is pretty complicated. So we measure blood pressure. We measure blood sugar. We now measure ketone levels if you're in a ketogenic diet. Those are all measurements we can do on our own pretty inexpensively, and I recommend that you do those things. We've talked about those before. If we are digging deeper, we might order blood tests. We might order the FIT test, the food inflammation test. It's exciting that we're seeing a lot more medical tests now that can be ordered at home without a doctor, but they're still pretty expensive. You could easily wrap up several $1,000s in testing, and that's just not practical for a lot of people. Now, if we, for example, have somebody where we expect a lot of inflammation, we might do a C-reactive protein. If we suspect somebody is under a lot of stress, we might do a 24-hour cortisol test. We have been talking about testing gut bacteria. All that is great information, and I am an information junkie. The more I can get, the better. I have two tests sitting here on my desk waiting for me to do. I'm testing the testing all of the time, but the biggest drawback to most medical testing is just pure cost. And if we need it, then I recommend it. But I've been looking for something that we can measure inexpensively that will give us an overall indication of health. And I think I found it. And this is new because up until now, just recently, and I'm talking about within the last month, we haven't had the easy, inexpensive ability to test this. It required an EKG or a lab of some sort, and it was expensive and time-consuming. Reading the results was difficult, understanding the results. And now I'm testing some devices and I'm testing some software, some apps that will allow you to check this very inexpensively. And what I'm talking about, I touched on this last week, is heart rate variability. So most of us are familiar with measuring your heart rate, which is the same as somebody says, check your pulse. You know, you find your pulse somewhere on your body, your neck or your wrist. You count the number of beats in 15 seconds, multiply it by four, or count the beats in 60 seconds. That gives us our heart rate. The lower our resting heart rate is an indication of good heart health, a strong heart. The range roughly for the average person is 60 to 100 beats a minute. The lower you are on that scale, the stronger your heart is. For elite athletes, the scale is roughly 40 to 60. So the more active you are, the stronger your heart becomes and the less often it has to beat. That's a good measurement. That's pretty simple. But what we really don't understand, what a lot of people don't understand, is that let's just say 60 beats per minute. Let's say you have a heart rate of 60 beats per minute. That seems pretty simple. That must be one every second. But it's not. If it was exactly one every second, that would be an indication that you are very unhealthy. This is almost counterintuitive. We would think that a nice steady heartbeat would be healthy. It's not. We want a lot of variation in the time between heartbeats. And that's what heart rate variability measures, is the time in between each individual heartbeat. And we don't want it to be consistent. We want it to be very inconsistent. We would like to see it that in between one heartbeat might be 0.8 seconds, in between the next might be 1.27 seconds. The more that number varies, the healthier we are. And the reason is that our body is responding and reacting to different controlling systems in your nervous system. We've talked about this in digestion. You've heard me talk about the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. And we talk about it in digestion because you want to be in the parasympathetic state when you're eating. That's called the rest and digest mode. So parasympathetic is rest and digest. Sympathetic is fight or flight. And we've talked about that again in digestion, but this goes on all day long. And the problem, I've talked about this many times, is that in our society today, we spend way too much time in that fight or flight mode. And it's just really hard on our health. When you're in the fight or flight mode, your body shuts down critical systems because it's only supposed to happen to save your life pretty rarely, and it shouldn't last long. We should only be in the sympathetic mode rarely and for short periods of time. When we're in that mode a lot, it releases chemicals that are good to keep us alive in an emergency, but they're very damaging to our health long term. I could go on and on and on about the side effects or the effects of being in the sympathetic state too often. It's weight gain and metabolic syndrome and hormonal imbalances and irritability and sleeplessness. And I could just go on and on and on. Inflammation. All of the things that negatively affect our health are triggered when we're in that sympathetic state. So we know that this is a problem. We see it on our NutriQ results, and we see it even more with truck drivers than the average population because of the lifestyle, the poor sleep patterns, the stress, the crazy hours, the inactivity, the poor diet, all of those things affect this in a negative way. The problem has been it's hard to measure. It's been almost impossible to measure, and it's hard to show somebody what works to get us out of this. We talk about the things all the time: relaxation techniques, deep breathing, square breathing, yoga, meditation, hypnosis, going out and just relaxing and walking, you know, in nature. All of those things are good at getting our body back in to the parasympathetic state, the rest and digest or rest and repair mode. And we need to do that, and we need to do it multiple times every day so that we don't stay in that fight or flight mode. So when we measure heart rate variability, and the exciting news now is there are devices just now hitting the market that can measure this, and they're not very expensive. So I'm testing devices and I'm testing software, and we are going to partner with whoever I think has the best solution to this and bring it to you. And we're talking about hardware and software under $200. When you think one of these medical tests can run us $400 or $500 and it only gives us one snapshot. Here we have a device and software under $200 that we'll be able to measure this anytime we want, every day, all day, throughout the day, and learn what really helps us. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that when we get back, and then we're going to get to your calls and questions. Stick around. This is Destination Health. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Talking about heart rate variability, measuring how often or the which system is dominant in our body, the fight or flight system or the rest and repair system. And we want those two to be in good balance. We want both of them to be strong. We don't want one of them to be more dominant. And I would tell you, if you do have one more dominant, it would be nice to have the rest and repair mode more dominant, but that's pretty rare. We'd like to see a good balance because that fight or flight mode has some benefits. It energizes us. It's really good if we need to get a lot of work done, but we've got to have that balance. And for the first time, we now have an easy, inexpensive way to measure this ongoing. And then we can use it for finding out what helps get us back into that rest and repair and rest and digest. It's referred to as many different things, but it's that relaxed state where our body is able to recover. So when we're in the fight or flight mode, that's pretty hard on our body. It's not bad that we're in it. We just can't be in it all the time, and we need balance so that our body has time to recover. Most of the early testing on HRV was done on elite athletes so that they knew when they could retrain, when they were going to have a good day to perform. And it's a really good measurement for them. But we're now learning that it's a great measurement of overall health. And there are, we can test stress with this. We can test your willpower. This one's a little strange, and this one's pretty new. But heart rate variability, we've talked about willpower being like a muscle. So you don't have unlimited willpower, or you don't just have the willpower that you think you were born with. Willpower is like a muscle. We can strengthen it. And when willpower is strong, we're good at making hard decisions. When willpower is weak, where we make very poor decisions. Heart rate variability goes hand in hand with willpower. This is a really interesting area that is also emerging science. So again, I'm testing hardware and software solutions right now, and I'm really excited about what we're coming up with. And I would say within the next 30 days, we will find a company to partner with on a hardware and software solution, and we will let you know. In fact, we'll get those solutions in our store and make them easy. And my goal is to get all my testing done and choose a partner company within the next 30 days. So you'll be hearing more and more about heart rate variability. I think this is very exciting. We can also use heart rate, and we're close to being able to use heart rate variability to check food sensitivities. Again, food sensitivity testing is really valuable. We have one we like, the Fit Test, but it's expensive. It's $400 or $500 for one test. And then if we want to go back and see if, you know, what we're doing health-wise has reduced our food sensitivities, we'd have to pay that again. So I've been looking for a better way. And there is something called the COCA's Pulse Test that you can do on your own. But the one of the devices I'm testing right now actually has COCA's Pulse Test built into the software. Right now it's using pulse rate, heart rate alone, but the company is working on using heart rate variability for food sensitivity testing, which will be even more accurate. So we're staying on top of that as well. All right, enough of that. Let's get to some of your calls and questions. We're off to Wisconsin. Joy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I emailed my Fit Test.
I've got it here in front of me, and you have got what we refer to as the big three.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah, so this is what I was just talking about, the Fit Test, food inflammation test. And this is a blood test that we can order. You can do it at home. And it is really valuable. I do the Fit Test. I do it multiple times. But like I said, it's expensive to keep doing it. You know, we make it part of our gold program because it is valuable. And what it's telling us is that you have proteins in your blood that shouldn't be there, and your body is reacting negatively to them. So this test can tell us a couple things. One, which foods you're reacting to so we can avoid them. But two, the more foods you are reacting to, it's also an indication of how severe your leaky gut might be. We all have some level of leaky gut. Some people way worse than others. So we can react to all kinds of foods. I believe, if I remember right, our Fit Test tests almost 150 different foods, additive substances. You are reacting pretty strongly to what we call the big three, which is dairy, eggs, and wheat. And you've hit all three. Dairy and eggs, you are reacting, you have a severe reaction to, and wheat, you have a moderate reaction. So this is pretty common. These are the big three. These are also the three that cause the most problems. You know, we've seen people who have a severe reaction to plums. Well, you don't eat a lot of plums. They're not in every food you pick up off the shelf or get in a restaurant, so it's not a big deal. But when you look at dairy, egg, and wheat, it's really, really difficult to avoid those foods. They're in almost everything. And half the time, we can't even identify that they're in there because we don't know all the names they can be under. The good news, though, is when you react negatively to these three, if you can avoid them, the results are usually pretty amazing. We see lots of improvements. So have you been working on eliminating these?
Yes. Actually, as a young adult, I noticed I had an allergy to cow's milk because I would get ear infections all the time, and I had read somewhere that that was one of those things that might cause it. I did not. Right. I'm from Wisconsin, so I still ate cheese and cottage cheese. I mean, I didn't think I had a reaction, but the other thing I did notice now that I'm off of it, I've been off of it for 2 weeks, I don't have that sluggish feeling after I eat. Like my body is working overtime digesting. I have a better outlook. I've done research, but I never put the together that when I'm having a bad day with the load board, because I pick the loads for my husband, that
right.
Maybe what I was eating was causing me to be more down on myself, that kind of reaction. But I'm feeling a lot better now. I actually, when the $450, whatever we paid for this, is well worth the money. I've learned so much about myself, and actually we took our tax refund and bought these, saying up about how wonderful it is. I got off milk, I got off processed foods, and I got off processed sugar. The last piece of cake I ate was on Mother's Day. And so I'm cooking a lot from scratch at home, which I had been doing for many years. And then we would just put it in the coolers and put it on the truck. And we rarely ate out. We just put everything in crock pots and ate like that. So it's been challenging. I think the biggest thing to give up was beer, because I have a hops and a wheat. So
right.
That's my great research now, is to find beer, actually, because, again, I'm from Wisconsin. The other question I do have, though, is I've been doing kefir, and I was using milk to make kefir. I see you can do water kefir. Can you make the cream cheeses out of water kefir?
No, but you can make cream, really good cream cheeses out of cashew.
Cashew, okay.
Yeah, so look up cashew recipes, like dairy alternative cashew recipes. So you can make, cream cheeses, soft cheeses. You can make cream-like sauces. It really simple. Okay. I'll tell you how simple it is. Like a white sauce for like pasta, where normally it would be milk and cheese. And, you can do a white sauce. You take raw cashews, raw unsalted cashews, soak them in water for about 2 hours. And throw them in a blender, and they come out with the creamiest milk-like consistency. And then you can, there's a product like a nutritional yeast, if you've ever seen nutritional yeast, and it can have some problems. You got to watch some people react to it, but it has a very cheese-like, Parmesan cheese-like taste. So you put some of that in this cashew, and you'd swear it was a white Parmesan sauce. Hold that thought. We'll come back. So there are some pretty good dairy alternatives. And eventually, you may be able to try other forms of dairy. We'll talk about that a little bit when we get back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. We're going to get right back to the calls. I was talking with Joy in Wisconsin. So, Joy, if you go to like a Whole Foods or, even a grocery store, the health food section, go look in the refrigerated case, usually by the produce, and they will have a lot of the dairy, non-dairy kind of substitutions, and it'll give you an idea. And most of them are fairly easy to make at home. The cashew, the soaked cashews is pretty awesome. I have made, a white sauce And then I'll put it over pasta, but it's almond flour pasta because I don't do any wheat or any gluten. And I have had people just rave about it. They think the pasta is better than normal. The sauce is excellent. And there's no wheat, no dairy in there.
Okay.
Yeah. So you mentioned something I want to touch on because this is important. And people have a hard time understanding this until they experience it. And you did. And that is how much food affects our mood. You know, it is not a little reaction or a little factor. It is a huge factor. I've talked about when I cleaned up my diet, I would literally just sit there and be like over the top happy for no apparent reason. And I've hardly ever experienced that before. And now it's more of the norm. And we now know that most of the neurotransmitters we talk about in our brain, we've heard about them, the happy hormones and serotonin and all those things. Most of those neurotransmitters are produced in our gut. And there is a direct impact from our diet on our gut bacteria and that neurotransmitter. We are designed to be happy most of the time. And we don't need anything outside of ourselves to be happy. We should be in a happy state most of the time. We've gotten to the point where we're so stressed out, we're so unhappy, our gut bacteria is so messed up, we have anxiety, depression, and then we look to outside things to make us happy. We buy stuff, or we gamble, or we drink, or you know, we eat to try to be happy. And we shouldn't have to do any of those things. We should be happy most of the time. And you have experienced a little bit of this. Pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is. It really is. And like I said, when I feel really good. I feel so much better. And I was ready. My mother is experiencing severe memory loss. She's in her 80s. And if I can get off sugar, if I can get off flour and not have those experiences, I'm all in. I mean, there's no looking back.
Yeah. So, you know, I was going to say that there may come a time where you could go back to some dairy. There are some forms of dairy that are less reactive. Hard aged cheeses are a lot less reactive than fresh cheeses. So like Parmesan or even aged cheddar when it starts to get dry and hard. So at some point, you may want to go back and try some of those things. And my open on, you know, the devices now that'll measure HRV, this is going to be a way where we can test these food sensitivities without going back and spending the $450 again. So I'm excited about that to give people the way. So I still recommend the fit test up front. Let's find out all the things you're reacting to. Then if you do a really good gut healing protocol and we get your gut healed, then we could go back and retest some of those foods and see if they're still reactive, and they may not be. A lot of people find that even though they're very reactive to cow's milk and casein, that they do really well with goat's milk or they do well with raw milk. So you can experiment with, or some people who react to all kinds of dairy do just fine with yogurt, even though it's all dairy. So you may, at some point, you may want to go back and experiment. There are times when I don't even want to mess with it. You know, I look at it and go, maybe I could eat that food, maybe not. I don't care. I'm just going to avoid it because I feel so good. Why take the chance?
Yeah, I agree. So what do you recommend for me for my gut to just start repairing that?
Let me take a look at your NutriQ because I've got that here. You're showing some upper GI symptoms. That's actually your highest score was upper GI. Liver and gallbladder, you were not scored at all. I mean, that's excellent. So it looks like your liver gallbladder function is pretty solid. You've got some small intestine issues. So what I would recommend is like a combination of hydrochloric acid and enzymes. So like a hydrozyme, would be a good product for you that you would eat with meals. And I have a feeling you've cleaned up your diet so much that probably 30 or 60 days on the supplement is going to be all that you need.
Okay.
I would start with, normally we start somebody with like the Hydrazyme and the Beta Plus, but your liver and gallbladder scored so low, I wouldn't even bother with the any of the beta products. I would do, I might just try the Hydrazyme and a good probiotic.
Okay. Sounds good.
Other
Thank
than
you
that,
so
I,
much for your help.
Yeah, I think everything else on your chart, the sugar handling scored a little high, but I think your good clean diet now and eliminating those reactive foods, I think a lot of this stuff is going to go away over the next 60 to 90 days. So, you know, try all of this for another 30 days, retake the NutriQ, and we'll take a look at it again. Let's go to Oklahoma. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about the an alternative, maybe not an alternative to grass-fed beef, but grass-fed pork. Is it kind of the same theory as grass-fed beef?
No, actually, there's a big difference, and I'll explain why. So cows are what are called ruminants. They are animals that really only eat grass or vegetation, primarily grasses of different kinds. And ruminants have a very, very different digestive system from non-ruminants. They have multiple stomachs. If you've heard the term chew your cud, they have to kind of regurgitate their food and keep chewing it. Their stomach doesn't have acid. It has bacteria because acid won't break down the cell walls of grass. Humans can't eat grass because we can't digest it at all. So ruminants, cows, deer, sheep, things like that they should be grass-fed because that's their natural diet. But pigs are actually omnivores like humans. Pigs can eat almost anything. So they can eat vegetation, and they do, but they eat meat, protein, bugs. They eat almost anything that has calories a pig can eat and digest. So we wouldn't refer to a pig as grass-fed. We would refer to a healthy pig as pastured, just meaning that they're allowed to go out in the wild and find their own food because they're smart enough to know what they should be eating. And chickens are the same way. Chickens aren't grass-fed. Chickens are pastured because they eat bugs. They do eat weeds. They eat, you know, some grains if they find them naturally. So chickens and pigs, we want them to be pastured. We want them out in nature eating what they would naturally eat. But when you find conventionally raised pigs, they're fed a very poor quality diet. It's processed. It's overprocessed. They're fed garbage. They're fed scraps of, you know, really poor quality. So when you're looking for a high-quality pork, you're looking for pork that's been raised without antibiotics and hormones and has been pastured or raised on its natural diet.
Okay. We've got some chickens, but I was just recently given a hog, and they talked to me about throwing the sweet beef to it, and I'd heard you talk about the grass-fed beef, not to do that, and I didn't know if it would be the same wiping out the nutrients, doing the same that they do traditionally with beef.
There are actually there's a company called Slanker Grass Fed Meats, and their beef is all grass fed, but their pork, they actually have what's called omega-3 pork and chicken, where they are raised pretty naturally, but their diet is supplemented with feed that's high in omega-3, because that's what we're looking for in meat. We're trying to find a good balance of omega-3 and omega-6. And when an animal eats its natural diet, it will have a good balance. But some companies are finding they can supplement that to increase the omega-3, and that can be done in pork and chicken. All we're really looking for, though, is a pig that's out running around eating its natural diet. That's going to be a healthy pig. And I eat a lot of pork, but I try to get good quality pork when I can. We're going to get to a break. We're going to come back and get to more of your calls and questions. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're heading into the fourth segment of the first hour. At the end, don't hang up. I'm going to say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff I say at the end of the show, but we're going to come back and do a second hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get back to as many calls as I can. We're off to Texas. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you doing today?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
Well, mayonnaise. I made an attempt at homemade mayonnaise using your recipe you got on the website. And what I ended up with was just a dark green goo. I'm wondering, I heard someone called in that had a similar problem, and you mentioned something about adding a little bit of already emulsified mayonnaise and then mixing it again or something like that.
That's a way to save one that went wrong. So if we, and if you do this right, it will work, I'd like to say 9 out of 10 times, but it's even more than that. It's more like 19 out of 20, or it's amazing the little differences that things can make. Like if you watch my video, you have to put the stuff in the jar in that order. You have to put the stick blender all the way to the bottom. And if you, I have probably made in the last 30 batches, I haven't had a single one not come out. So that's why I put that. There's lots of different ways to make mayonnaise. You can do it with a whisk. I mean, I've done it, but boy, with a whisk, it is a lot of work and things can go wrong. You can do it in a blender or a food processor. But in a blender or food processor, you have to drizzle the oil in really, really slowly, or it will break and the oil won't combine with the other ingredients. And that's when you get that slimy, sloppy mess. But the jar method with the stick blender, it works every time. If you follow those orders, make sure you stick the blender all the way to the bottom. It's the most foolproof method I have found.
Okay, well, I did everything you said on your video. I used a stick blender and a jar, and I put it in that order. I'm thinking, I did a little bit of research. I'm thinking maybe I used a cold egg instead of a room temperature egg, and I may have poured in the oil a little too quickly, and it maybe mixed around the order, and then it didn't turn out.
Possibly. Now, I've heard the cold and room temperature egg thing. I use a cold egg every time. Comes right out of the refrigerator. Okay. I never let it. So I don't think that's a big problem. Pouring the oil too fast or too kind of powerful of a pour that mixes things up, that could cause the problem. Because the way this works is the oil is sitting on top. When we put the stick blender all the way to the bottom, we emulsify the egg and the other ingredients so quickly, and then the oil starts to incorporate in slowly. So if you got the oil all mixed in with the other ingredients, not going to work. So that was more likely your problem.
Okay. So what can I do? I bought a jar of mayonnaise that is basically the same recipe that you have. Looks really clean, very few ingredients. I'm wondering, to save the mayonnaise that I did attempt to make, how can I use this purchased mayonnaise to save it? What do I need to do?
Yeah. So So get that, and you're using a small mason jar, right? Because you don't want a lot of room on the side. Okay. So take that same size mason jar, put maybe a good heaping tablespoon of the high quality mayonnaise in the bottom, then pour your other slop in and do the same thing. Hit that, put the stick blender all the way to the bottom, hit the stick blender. It should incorporate yours into the emulsified mayo.
Okay, excellent. Now, could I make a quick suggestion, Kevin?
Sure.
I'm wondering, perhaps you could put that, maybe put that kind of stuff on y'all's website where people who mess it up like I did can go there and don't have to call into the show.
My summer project is to do a lot of those kind of instructional videos and get them up on the website. We're redoing the navigation on the website right now, so it's easier to find everything. And I love that recommendation, so thank you. That would be a good addition to that video. We'll get it all on the same page and say, look, it, you know, if you do this, it works right. But if for some reason it doesn't, here's how you can save it. I will put that on my list of videos to make. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. My question today, I've been eating my diet, been eating keto for probably last year or so. I've been trying to stay pretty clean, but the problem I've been experiencing periodically is leg cramps and cramps in my feet, toes. Generally happens at nighttime after I go to sleep. Sleeping for maybe an hour or 2 hours at nighttime, and then all of a sudden I get the feet and the cramps, and of course you know how excruciating that can be. What causes that, and is there anything that can be corrected by diet?
Yeah. This is a very common problem when people eat keto. The good news is it's very easy to fix. Are you drinking Bulletproof coffee?
Well, I'm not drinking Bulletproof coffee, but I am taking Light Balance. I drink regular coffee in the morning, 2 or 3 cups regular coffee, and that's generally when I've been taking 2 capsules of Light Balance a day.
So when you put 2 capfuls, how much coffee? 10 ounces, 12 ounces?
I usually drink about 2 12-ounce cups, so I'll put a capful in each cup.
So what I want you to do is take 10 ounces of water and put 2 capfuls of Light Balance in it and taste it. And what you're looking for is if it's a very neutral taste, or you kind of say, oh, well, I can tell there's a little something in there. It's kind of a little salty. That would be an indication that you are still very mineral deficient. If you put 2 capfuls in 10 ounces and you can't even drink it, it just gags you. It tastes so bad. Then you're sufficient. It's a really easy test on mineral balance. We can taste it. So the most common cause of nighttime cramps. And I was going to ask you, do you cramp more often when you're active or when you're sleeping? And if it's when you're sleeping, it's almost always a mineral imbalance and dehydration. So you may not be getting enough water. And forget all the formulas. Everybody talks about, well, this many ounces for this much body weight and all. Those can be so far off because there's too many factors. You just look at the signs to know whether you're dehydrated or not. If you're getting a lot of chapped lips or dry skin, or you find yourself that you're really thirsty and you're looking for something to drink. If your urine is very dark colored or darker colored, those are much better indications of if you're drinking enough water or not. Forget all the formulas, but I would start drinking more water, and I would continue with the Light Balance, but I would do that taste test as well. And the other thing that's really good for mineral balance is the raw cacao, the raw chocolate, or the Bulletproof hot chocolate mix. Chocolate is an excellent source of minerals. So getting that raw chocolate in your, that's why the Bulletproof coffee recipe that I use with the hot chocolate mix and the light balance, once I started that, all of my cramping issues went away completely. I just don't have them anymore. So it really does come down to mineral balance and hydration.
Okay. And you said, again, if you put two capfuls of the light balance in a 10-ounce glass of water, and you're saying if you can taste it, that it's a little salty, you're saying that that is an indication that it's, that you're sufficient?
Or if it
like really gags you, you're having too much, or?
Yeah, if you can't taste it at all, like you go, oh, well, I can barely tell there's anything in here. That means you're very deficient. You need a lot more of those minerals because it's your body saying, drink this. But when your body says, oh, that tastes awful, that's your body saying, hey, look, you have enough of those minerals. You're just fine. So in the beginning, when I first started doing this, I had to use 2 capfuls per cup of coffee, which worked out to about 4 capfuls a day. And it took me almost a month like that. And then I got to the point where 1 capful in each cup of coffee, and I drink 2 a day, keeps me in the perfect balance. I don't need 2-4 capfuls anymore. But if I go a day or two without it, I can start to see the cramping come back. Mineral balance is something you have to stay on top of.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, well, that's very helpful. Thanks. Thanks so much, Kevin. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. We used to get a lot of minerals from our food, but our modern farming techniques, you know, using the fertilizers we use now, the soil is mineral depleted. We don't get those minerals in our vegetables. We don't even get it in the animals we eat. We've got to get back to eating healthier. But until then, the light balance is the way to go. You can find that in our store at letstruck.com. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Russell. All right, we're going to start a second hour, and it looks like I could squeeze in a couple more questions. So if you want to jump in right now, press 1 on your phone, and we will get to you. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. My co-host, Kim Cockerham, is off traveling today. She will be back next week joining us. So I'm flying solo today. I've got a couple things I want to talk about, and then we'll get to your calls and questions. So the last couple weeks I've been mentioning heart rate variability and all the promise that it holds, especially for our tribe. Heart rate variability is a very good measure of how stress is affecting our body, our health, our life. And when we talk about adrenal fatigue, which is very, very common with truck drivers, really a problem with team drivers because of the sleep issues and the constantly in the truck and moving, we know it's a big problem. We know what the solutions are. You have to relax more. We have to use things like meditation, hypnosis, deep breathing, yoga, you know, getting away from work and stress and going out walking in nature. Acupuncture can help some of these things. The problem is most people don't believe that 10 minutes of meditation is going to make a difference. And we've never been able to show them the difference. Well, with this measure of heart rate variability, we can see the difference immediately. And I've been testing all of this, and I think I'm within about 30 days of releasing our solution, hardware and software. We're pretty excited about this. There's a lot of things we can do with heart rate variability. But one of the other big factors in adrenal fatigue, and this is all tied together, these two topics are very closely interrelated, is the sleep issue. And we know that sleep is tough for truck drivers for a lot of reasons. Noise issues, team drivers, the truck's always moving, different sleep cycles, trying to sleep sometimes during the day. You know, it'd be wonderful if we could let our body sleep on its natural circadian rhythm, which is usually dictated by light. You know, we wake up when we should naturally wake up when the sun comes up. We should get tired and go to sleep when the sun goes down. That's a natural circadian rhythm, and all of the chemicals in our body that trigger sleep and wakefulness are all affected by light. So there's another problem. But the sleep and adrenal fatigue, it's a very circular issue. So when you don't sleep good, it makes adrenal fatigue worse. When you have adrenal fatigue, your sleep is disrupted. We have to address these two together. This is my major focus right now and where I am spending all of my time on research and testing. I'm very excited about the heart rate variability, the fact that we have a less than, once I get through all my testing and choose all of the devices I'm looking at, hardware and software will be less than $200. Once you pay that upfront cost, there won't be any more cost. You can do all the testing you want. That's exciting. I'm also looking at lots of solutions on the sleep side of things. And this is another area that's really exciting, that technology is giving us lots of new options. So I think I'm within about 30 days of finding a really good solution for heart rate variability, adrenal fatigue, those kind of things. I'm probably more like 3 to 6 months away from a really good sleep solution. There are some things on the market. I'm testing a lot of things. There are some companies I'm in touch with that will be releasing products later this year around October and November. And I may wait for some of those because there's some promising new technology. And this is a more complicated area. So I'm going to be doing some more longer term testing on the sleep side. But this is my major focus: adrenal fatigue, stress, sleep. This is kind of the last frontier with truck drivers. We know how to fix diet. We know which supplements are working for which people. We have all the health plans. We're seeing outstanding results. We're very excited about the results we're seeing in our health mentoring programs. We find these cases, though, where somebody is just in pretty extreme adrenal fatigue, and we haven't been able to fix it. It's maybe 5% or less, but that bugs me. We should be able to fix this. And that's my focus, getting to the point where we can easily reverse adrenal fatigue, even in the toughest cases. And I know we can do it, but I think we're looking at about 30 days on one of these, and maybe 3, at the outside, 6 months. On the sleep issue, but I will keep you updated on that. I think I'm going to get to as many calls as I can today. Let's get to the phones. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. This isn't my question, but I wanted to ask you the other call there on the other show about peanuts and cashews, if we should be avoiding them at all, or if that's an individual sensitivity.
So let's make a clarification here, because this confuses a lot of people. nuts are really healthy. Nuts are a great source of fat. They're a great source of minerals. They're a good source of fiber many times. They're usually low in carbohydrates. I love nuts. Peanuts are not nuts. That's where the confusion comes in. Peanuts are legumes. They're the same as beans and lentils. And peanuts have some inherent problems. So I avoid peanuts completely. But I eat all kinds of other nuts, almonds, pistachios, macadamia nuts, walnuts, pecans, Brazil nuts, pine nuts. Virtually every other nut I can get, I eat almost every day. No, probably every day. Not peanuts. Peanuts are high in carbs because they're a legume. They have lectins, which are anti-nutrients. That's a bad thing. And all nuts do. But peanuts also are very, very high in what are called mold toxins, mycotoxins, that are very disruptive to a lot of systems in our body. So nuts are good. And the distinction, if you see the word tree nuts are what we're looking for. Almonds, pistachios, walnuts, all those things grow on trees. Peanuts grow underground. Because they're not a nut. So nuts are good, peanuts are bad. Does that help?
Yeah, where do cashews fall on that?
Cashews are, they are one of the higher carb nuts, but as long as you're eating them within your overall carb count for the day, I love cashews. I eat them virtually every day. And cashews are the ones you can make those really cool like dairy alternatives, sauces and cream sauces and cheeses. You can make cashew milk pretty simply at home. So I like cashews. You do have to watch the carb count on those.
Okay. Yeah, that helps. I had always lumped cashews in with peanuts, but I guess not.
Nope. Cashews are good.
Okay. All right. Well, my actual question, my wife was just diagnosed with PCOS again. And of course, they said, here, have some birth control. And I was doing some more research and they said, oh, you should take metformin too. So obviously, that's probably not good advice.
It's horrible advice. But,
yeah. Is PCOS a metabolic disease? I've been reading.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. In fact, when we talk about type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome, that is 100% caused by an overload of carbohydrates in the diet. And PCOS is the way many women end up showing the symptoms. They get all of the typical symptoms of metabolic syndrome, but they get an additional load of symptoms in PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. The good news is 100% diet related, meaning it can be fixed very easily with diet. I say easily, I mean simply. It's not easy to change your diet, but it's simple to understand. We're going to come back and talk about that right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. talking with Brian in Pennsylvania. So, Brian, we can almost approach PCOS just the way we approach type 2 diabetes or metabolic syndrome. It's diet and stress related, primarily diet, but stress plays a big part. So in the last show and a little bit at the open here, when you heard me talk about the heart rate variability and the fight or flight response and the rest and digest, just like type 2 diabetes, we attack the diet first, low carb, nutrient dense, avoid the processed foods, processed sugars, grains. That will fix 80% of this problem in most people. And then we address the lifestyle side of stress. So anything that reduces stress, caffeine can be an irritator. So if she's drinking a lot of caffeine, it might help to cut back or eliminate it for a while. I like caffeine. I like coffee. There's a lot of good benefits. But sometimes when somebody's in the middle of these kind of symptoms, it will go away faster if we avoid caffeine, because caffeine tends to put our body in that fight or flight mode more often. But this is diet and lifestyle 100%. Nothing else that causes this. Nothing else that's going to fix it. They can put her on metformin and all of those things. She will be on them the rest of her life, and it will only make things worse over time. But the good news is, get the diet right, nutrient dense, low carb. I would actually start off with keto, and then move from a keto to a more paleo kind of diet and work on some stress things. And this will go away completely. There are thousands of documented cases of clearing PCOS up completely.
Thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome. So all the same things you hear me talk about to almost every caller, eliminating grains, possibly doing the fit test, because if she's reacting to foods, anytime we react negatively to a food, that ramps up our fight or flight system. That's why we can test for food sensitivities with heart rate variability. Yeah, all these things are completely interrelated. So we do recommend the fit test in this case, because she could be reacting severely to foods and not even know it. But that puts the body into that fight or flight mode. And PCOS is a hormonal imbalance. And fight or flight is what wreaks havoc with our hormones, because that's what it does. It releases a bunch of hormones into our bloodstream, and they should not be there all the time. When they are there all the time, this is the kind of stuff we get. So anything that causes stress to the body, mental stress, physical stress of working too hard, too long, or overtraining, stress from food that we're reacting poorly to, stress from environmental toxins, all of those things will contribute to these kind of problems. But the good news is we know it. And we know if you can eliminate or avoid those things, we can fix this pretty easily. No drugs, no surgeries, just good food and a good lifestyle. Let's go to Indiana. Jim, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Kevin. I want to thank you for everything you do with Destination Health and bringing us the keto lifestyle. It's helped me immensely.
Good, good. You're welcome. What can I do today?
About 2.5 years ago, I had issues with clogged arteries. My femoral arteries were clogged, 80% and 90%, and I went through the surgery. And of course, after that, the doctor recommended a statin, because he thinks that it's the cholesterol that's plugging them up. And I refused to do that, but I still kind of want to know what I could do to help it from coming back, because it kind of feels like it is coming back.
A good clean diet is the only thing that will fix this. The more and more we learn about statins, the more and more I think you're going to see, hopefully finally doctors will start moving away from them. The testing just shows there's virtually no benefit to statins. There's tons of negative side effects. But what we know there are people that have a much higher risk of clotting and clogging, but it's diet related and it's primarily carbs. It's fructose and sugars that cause our blood to get that way. So a good, clean, high fat diet is just the opposite of what they told us, is what fixes this. You know, there are certain foods you can add, nutrient dense foods. I talked about raw cacao, raw chocolate. That's excellent for this. But really, the longer you are on a whole food diet, no grains of any kind, and, you know, as little processed food. But the other thing here is good quality protein. And I know that's one of the bigger challenges we face on the road. You know, if you can get the grass-fed beef, the pastured pork, pastured chicken, pastured eggs, those go a long way towards fixing this, because the poor quality fats that are in conventionally raised meat is what can contribute to this. So, you know, keto is wonderful, and you know this, keto fixes a lot of things, but you can eat a very poor quality ketogenic diet. It will fix some things, but there's some other things it's not going to help. And that's when we have to start looking towards food quality, primarily in our proteins and our fats, but certainly adding in. So you've been keto for a while. Are you still trying to lose weight or trying to fix any blood sugar issues? Or have you kind of gotten that taken care of?
I've kind of got that and taken care of. I was 285, 290 pounds, but I'm 6'5" and I'm 240 and comfortable right there. And that's kind of what I use to judge how much, you know, I can add a little bit of carbs here and there, as long as I keep my weight right about there and I'm monitoring my blood sugar, and it's a lot better than it used to be. But
that's perfect.
You've immensely helped.
Yeah. So now is when, and you've got it exactly right. Your weight is an excellent measure of this, because if you start overdoing the carbs, you'll gain weight. You'll know it almost immediately. So that's a great way to measure this and do exactly what you're doing. Seek out those higher quality nutrient dense carbs, berries of all kinds.
Joint pain comes back too.
Yeah, you're right. The joint pain comes back when you start cheating on this. That's probably my first indication is joint pain. Seek out those higher quality carbs, more sweet potatoes, purple potatoes are excellent. Berries are great. You can even sneak in, you know, even some of the higher sugar fruits here and there, an apple and nut butter, the monkey brittle's a great balance. Seek out more of that nutrient dense liver. If you can do liver, all of the seafood, you know, wild caught salmon and tuna, sardines, you really want to start looking for nutrient density now.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help, Kevin, and thanks for all you do.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Congratulations. I'd love when people get those kind of results. Let's go to Illinois. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for taking my call, Kevin, and I don't get to hear every show, so I'm sure you've addressed this issue before, but I haven't heard it, so I guess it'll be new to me. I'm going to throw the question right out, and then we'll follow up with details. What are the root causes of the dietary contributions to and the nutritional therapy for high blood pressure?
Got it. This is a good question.
If you want to know where I'm at, I can tell you that.
Yeah, give me the numbers.
Okay, I have been on a, I think it's lisinopril / HCTZ at a rate of 10 milligrams at 12.5 milligrams for, I don't know, probably 10 or 12 years now. And as part of my Liberty Health Share deal, a little coach had me keeping track of my blood pressure, and I've got probably 2 or 2.5 months of blood pressure daily. Blood pressure readings, and they are ranging always from about the mid-40s on the high end and the mid-80s to upper 90s on the low end. And for some unexplained reasons, once in a while I'll have a day that it'll be down to 125 over 75. No reason that I can pinpoint whatsoever. So
Yeah, there's
where I'm at.
Good. There's a lot of variability in blood pressure. That's why the old model of only having your blood pressure checked at the doctor is not a good model. Some people, there's a very clear syndrome called white coat syndrome. The minute they are in the doctor's office, their blood pressure goes through the roof. Then they get put on a drug. But if we check them outside the doctor's office, they have normal blood pressure. So this is a problem. So I'm glad that you're checking your own. I recommend everybody should. So let me get to a break. I'll come back and I'll talk about what we can do to lower blood pressure. The good news is it's not that difficult. We're able to do it all the time. So stick around. I'll tell you how we do that right after this. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. I'm talking with Jerry in Illinois about blood pressure. Jerry, have you ever, and I hesitate to recommend this, it's something I would do, but have you ever just stopped taking the high blood pressure medication for a week or so and then checked your own?
No.
And it might not be a bad idea.
I kind of got to disagree with you on that white coat syndrome. I have identified it as the cute nurse with leaning next to you syndrome.
There you go. That could be it too.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you're checking your own. You may want to just knock off the medication for a couple days and monitor it and see what happens, because that gives us a better idea of where you are naturally. Because blood pressure medications absolutely work. They lower your blood pressure, but they're doing is covering up the underlying cause. So we want to know, is there really an underlying cause? And just like almost every other question I get, this is pure diet. Mostly diet, a little bit of lifestyle. So it's kind of the same. Diet fixes almost all of this stuff. The one thing I found about blood pressure, whereas blood sugar, inflammation, many of those things came down really quickly, like 30 days into eating a clean diet, and those things have disappeared. My blood pressure improved over a year. The longer I did this, the better my blood pressure got. There are some foods we can add that will really help this. So always, always, we're talking about a good clean diet first, because that is going to be the biggest single factor. So eliminating grains, eliminating processed food and sugars, and eating nutrient-dense whole food fixes this for almost everybody. But if we add in a couple specific foods, it will get even better. Blood pressure is maintained and managed by minerals. So sodium, potassium, and magnesium working together. We've always been told that if you have high blood pressure, you need to be on a low salt diet. That's not true. Doesn't really help. It's not excess salt that's causing the problem. It's the fact that in the standard American diet, we get too much poor quality salt, the table salt, the junk stuff, and we get very little potassium and magnesium. You can actually add salt to your diet, make it good quality sea salt, and make sure that you get enough magnesium and potassium to balance it out, and that will lower your blood pressure. That's why we really like the, are you drinking bulletproof coffee?
No. I should probably, but no, I'll have one cup of regular coffee of a morning, and then I'll drink water the rest of the day. I completely eliminated soda pop. I once in a great long while, I'll stop at an A&W and have a weak moment and have a little mug of root beer, but that's just about it, about the only soda pop I'll drink.
Okay. So caffeine is one of those, we got to kind of watch caffeine when we have high blood pressure. I love the Bulletproof coffee because it's easy to throw in our raw chocolate or the hot chocolate mix, which is loaded with good minerals for blood pressure. In fact, there is a tribe, a group of people that live on an island somewhere off of South America. I forget the name of the island. But for whatever reason, their diet is extremely high in raw chocolate. They drink raw chocolate drinks all throughout the day, like 10 cups a day of this raw chocolate drink that they make. They have the lowest recorded blood pressure on the planet as a group. It's just incredible how low, but it's a healthy low blood pressure. You can get blood pressure that's low and it's a bad thing. It can actually be a sign of adrenal fatigue, but theirs is a very healthy low blood pressure, and they attribute it to all the raw chocolate that they consume. So
because of the availability of it.
Yeah, it's right there, and it's just part of their natural diet. Right. And they've just come to the place where they consume a lot of it. The good news is now really high quality raw chocolate is easy to come by. It's most grocery stores carry it. We have it in our store. I like the hot chocolate mix because it's got the good quality cocoa butter, which is an additional good fat for us. It's got the raw cacao. It's got some good stuff in it. Then the other supplement that we like, and this goes really well in Bulletproof coffee, is the Light Balance. That's the whole reason we carry that is because it is a balance of sodium, magnesium, and potassium. The three minerals we're trying to keep in balance, and two of those are hard to get in our diet. But if you are eating a good, clean diet, add some raw chocolate, add the Light Balance, and give it time, you will get off the medication. And you will have normal blood pressure. There's no reason to have it, and we see this repair itself all the time.
What would you say is a normal reading?
You know, that normal has always been considered 120 over 80. When we get to 130 over 90, they consider that pre-hypertension, pre-high blood pressure. And not any real danger at 130 over 90. It's when it starts getting above that we worry about, you know, the side effects or the effects of high blood pressure. It's not unusual to see people get off the medication and end up in that 110 over 75 range. That's really healthy. When you get, you know, if you're 120 over 80 without medication, then I would never take medication. If you're 130 over 90, I still wouldn't take medication. I would work on diet and lifestyle. The other things that when we talk about adrenal fatigue and I talk about fight or flight, meditation, yoga, hypnosis, the apps that are available, those are excellent at lowering blood pressure. Deep breathing, square breathing, those will all lower blood pressure as well. So like most other things when it comes to health, diet and lifestyle, I'm going to start sounding like a broken record, but the good news is it's the same stuff that fixes all of these problems. Whether we talk about PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome in women, or high blood pressure, or high cholesterol, or type 2 diabetes, or metabolic syndrome, good, clean, nutrient-dense diet fixes most of it. A little bit of lifestyle modification fixes the rest. That's the good news. Let's go to Montana. Tyler, welcome to the program.
Kevin, so I've been doing the keto diet for probably 2 or 3 weeks now, and I've been struggling with drinking a lot of water. I drink, a lot of water, no problem. But then I crave like other liquids. And I'm not sure what else I can drink that isn't high in sugar.
Yeah, this is always a tough one. You know, water is all we need to survive and be healthy. But we've been, you know, so accustomed to drinking carbonated beverages, sugary beverages, beverages with flavor, that this is a tough habit to break. So there are a couple things you can do. One of the tricks that Kim loves is, have you ever seen the Soda Stream machines?
No.
So it's a machine you can buy. They're not very expensive. You can pick them up at any place that sells appliances, Bed Bath & Beyond, places like that. Basically, what they do is they use the little CO2 cartridges and they carbonate water. So you make your own carbonated drinks, but then you can control what goes into it. So you could do some lemon or lime juice, some, you know, fruit juices. I don't want you to pour a bunch of fruit juice into water, but if you were even to squeeze an orange or grapefruit or lemons and limes and then carbonate it, and you can even put in some of the good sweeteners, depending on where you are in your carb count and things like that. If you're worried about carbs, you could use a stevia erythritol blend is a good one. If you're not too worried about the carb count, you could use a little honey or maple syrup or coconut sugar, things like that. So we're trying to get some carbonation, a little bit of flavor, maybe even a little bit of sweetness to replace that craving you're having without all the negative side effects. So that's one of the ways. For me, the carbonation has never been a big deal. So for me, I can get by with just throwing some lemon or lime in some water. The light balance, if you're going to do this, the light balance, the saltiness actually enhances all those flavors, plus gives you good mineral balance. Let me get to a break and I'll come back. We'll talk more about that right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phones. I was talking with Tyler in Montana. So Tyler, my son, just told me about a product. It's called Zevia, Z-E-V-I-A. And they're sodas, all natural, and they use a stevia erythritol blend, which is what I just talked about. So rather than buy the soda machine and try to do your own, you could buy these. And this is a good alternative if you're craving those other drinks. The other thing you can experiment with, I like a lot of teas. There are so many teas, black teas, white teas, green teas, herbal teas. Those are a nice alternative as well because you can get all kinds of flavor. You could put a little natural sweetener into those. You can drink them hot. You can drink them cold. That's another good alternative. So those things should all help you out, and they're primarily water, so you're still going to get your hydration from those things as well. Does that help?
Okay. I've been doing Simply orange juice.
Yeah, stay
sure
away.
I was going to be like too high in sugar.
Way, way, way too high in sugar. It's off the charts in sugar. Bottled fruit juices are way too high in sugar, all of them. The only exception could possibly be like a pure cranberry juice, which most people won't drink because it's too tart and not sweet enough. But other than that,
I tried that yesterday.
Yeah, I actually like straight cranberry juice, but even that I won't drink. You know, if you want the fruit, eat the fruit whole, but you even have to watch that. I mean, even a whole orange, an orange may be one of the better, depending on the variety. One of the things you can always trust is your taste buds. We are very good at tasting sweet. You know, if you eat something sweet, you know it's sweet. Oranges, obviously in orange juice, it's sweet. That's why we crave it. Our body is programmed to crave sugar because it's so rare in nature. This is how we got into this problem. Our body craves sugar. In fact, it's the only flavor that they've shown that we crave naturally as a baby is sugar. But sugar in nature is rare. You know, you go out in the wild and try to live as a hunter-gatherer and tell me where you're going to find sugar. There's only a couple sources of it. Fruit, which doesn't really exist everywhere and in many parts of the world, only ripens one time a year. And it's interesting because it ripens in the fall just so we can eat it and fatten up for the winter. That's a pretty common scenario. The other place that sugar exists in large quantities in nature is honey. Go out and try to find honey in the wild and get to it because it's usually protected by a bunch of bees. So the sources of sugar in nature are hard to come by. Our body craves it. The problem now is it's everywhere. We are surrounded by sugar. It's in every processed food. It's in every product. We take the fruit and we hybridize it so it's way higher in sugar than natural fruit should be. Then we take it out of its natural container, an orange, which has fiber and all the other components, and we just drink the juice. And it's really horrible for us.
Okay. I have another question. My girlfriend has seizures. Is there any diet thing that you could do to help with that?
Do you know what causes her seizures or what type they are?
I don't know.
Is she epileptic?
She got them after her ex-husband beat her up. So.
Okay, so it's probably from a neurogenic damage. She probably had some form of brain damage that is causing the seizures. There actually is, you know, you hear us talk about the ketogenic diet all the time, and we talk about it for, you know, blood sugar control and weight loss and all of those things. But the very first use of the ketogenic diet, the very first medical use, was for epileptic seizures in children. In fact, it was the treatment until we developed a bunch of drugs that would stop seizures. But prior to the drugs that would control seizures, doctors used a strict ketogenic diet primarily for childhood epilepsy, and it was wildly successful. It's better than the drugs. The thing is, the drugs are just easier. You know, putting a child on a ketogenic diet is pretty difficult. So it's easier. We just give them drugs instead. But it's been shown to really improve seizures of all kinds. So there's even a really good website dedicated. It's called Charlie's Foundation, the name of it. Charlie's something. I think it's Charlie's Foundation. You can look that up and you'll see information about using. They even use what's called a restricted ketogenic diet. So if there's extreme seizures, they do a calorie restricted ketogenic diet. So yeah, it's the Charlie Foundation. So like 1,000 calories a day or less, which is pretty extreme, but it's easier, much easier to do a restricted calorie diet when it's ketogenic because your appetite goes away. She probably doesn't need it that extreme unless she's suffering a lot of seizures. The other thing that has been shown to help a lot, what state do you live in?
Well, we live in Washington, but we travel all over the country. So,
Is she a CDL driver?
No, she's trying to get her CDL, but she's been in the truck with me for a couple of years now.
Okay. And the reason I'm asking the state whether or not she's a CDL driver, the other thing that has shown more promise than anything in seizures is cannabis. Now, you could try CBD oil that is derived from hemp instead of cannabis. So there's no danger of, you know, showing up positive for THC if you're using a CBD oil that came from hemp, because hemp has no THC at all. They also derive CBD oils from cannabis, but the problem with that is it could show up on a drug test as THC. It has low levels of THC. Being in Washington State where it's legal, you can buy strains of cannabis that are very high in CBD, but they're also going to have some THC. So if you are subject to drug tests, you can't do this. But if you're not, this has shown amazing progress in virtually eliminating seizures almost immediately.
Okay.
So if she's looking at the, you know, getting a CDL, then you have to stay away from anything with THC, but you could do, and CBD oil derived from hemp is now legal in all states. And again, there's no THC, there's no risk on a drug test, but if you get CBD oil that is derived from cannabis, then it is going to have traces of THC, and you would have to be careful with that. A ketogenic diet and cannabis, the two most powerful tools against seizures of all kinds. Let's go to Illinois. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Listen, I was watching the documentary, PBS documentary on taste, and, you know, they discovered this fifth taste, umami.
Yes, and umami.
They were talking about strawberries and how they trick us into thinking that they're sweeter than they really are. And, you know, they compared them to blueberries, and they said that blueberries, naturally grown, wild blueberries are twice as sweet in the sugar content as a ripe strawberry. And they went into the acidity test. You know, strawberries are as acidic as lemons, grapefruit, orange, all the citruses. But when they're ripe, they said that they trick our brain into thinking that they're sweet when they're really not as sweet as they, as we're tasting them to be. Is that accurate? It is accurate.
And I talked earlier about being able to trust our taste when it comes to sweet, but there are some exceptions, and strawberries are one of them. If you're going to eat fruit, I say make it all berries. Berries are high in phytonutrients, high in antioxidants, lower in sugar. Blueberries are one of my favorites because they are low in sugar and they are off the charts in antioxidants and phytonutrients. But I do eat a lot of strawberries. Strawberries are really good. I had more I wanted to say about that, but the music's playing. They're going to chase me out of here, so we'll have to save that for next time. Thanks for joining us. We'll do it again next time. Remember, eat real food. Sleep like a baby. Connect like you mean it. Move as though your life depended on it. And remember, a healthy person has hundreds of wishes. An unhealthy person only has one. Stay healthy, my friends. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you here this weekend for the live show.